today on Family Talk.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh. You know, if you think about it, I'm sure you could probably name at least three high-profile cases in the media right now, all centering on the battle for religious liberty. And you know, there are dozens more every year at the state and local level as well. Well, our guests today on Family Talk have a unique insight into these ongoing battles across the nation and also into the judges who hear these cases. Kelly Shackelford is the CEO and founder of First Liberty Institute, the largest legal firm in the nation dedicated exclusively to protecting religious freedom for all Americans. Joining Kelly is Jeremy Dice, who is senior counsel for First Liberty and host of the First Liberty Briefing. Here now is Dr. Dobson to kick off today's edition of Family Talk.
Kelly, I'm going to ask you to start with some good news because we need it. For political reasons, most or many of the lower court judges that would have been appointed by Barack Obama were not confirmed because Republicans stopped it. And there were more than 100 vacancies that did not get filled, which now, because Republicans are in charge in the House and Senate and in the White House, may be filled with judges having a lifetime appointment who are consistent with our views, or at least the possibility is there for that. And that would change the nature of this country, would it not?
Yeah, I think most people are not aware. They're aware of the Supreme Court, and some are even aware maybe there might be another Supreme Court spot filled soon. They're hearing the rumors after Judge Gorsuch. It goes through the process. But what people don't know is, as we sit here right now, there are 116 federal judicial seats waiting for President Trump to fill. And these are lifetime appointments. So you think about putting people in those slots that are solid. They're going to be there defending the Constitution and religious freedom and these issues 30 years from now. I mean, our children and our grandchildren are going to directly benefit or be harmed if we mess this up, are going to be directly impacted by what happens in these next few years.
Who's providing input to the president on who he selects for those positions?
Well, that's the big issue. This is a new president. He's just starting. Certainly, the Attorney General's office and the lawyers there in the Justice Department will have input, but you really need outside input. One set of eyes on a set of judges, I think we've all learned you can make a lot of mistakes. So, for instance, we've committed to this at First Liberty. We've been vetting the Supreme Court choices. We're going to be heavily involved in trying to make sure that we have good appointments to these other benches. The Federalist Society is a well-known group that is very involved in doing the same kind of thing. I think all the great input possible to make sure that these are really good judges.
You guys have found that of the 20 people whose names are on that list that we hear about, that the president has given for possible Supreme Court nominees, some of them have records that contradict what we believe in, don't they?
Yeah, I think what you find when you see people on a list or whatever, and you look at a number, is a lot of people say, I've known this person for years. They're great. They're at all the meetings of the conservative this, that, or the other. But you know what you have to do is you have to do your due diligence. There can be even
some— You look at their decisions.
You've got to read their decisions. You've got to look into the background much further because— As you said in the last show, I mean, we've been surprised a lot in the past. I mean, everybody doesn't have to be reminded of Justice Souter, right?
Or it comes to mind.
And you can keep going back of surprises that have occurred because—and if you look back in those history, by the way, you'll find that some people did do some vetting and found some things, but it didn't get to the president or the people around the president making the decision. I think people are committed to try to make sure that doesn't happen again. So that if President Trump wants to appoint a certain type of judge or justice that follows a correct approach, that they at least can pick and not be surprised or shocked that they've picked somebody totally different. We've got to do our due diligence. And we're committed at First Liberty to do everything we can to help in that process.
And Jeremy, you're part of that process, aren't you? Are you encouraged by a new day coming, or at least the possibility of it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great hope. What people don't stop to think about is we get a lot of attention on the Supreme Court seat, and that's important. We should. But think about it this way. There are about 200 cases that the court hears every year. They get about 10,000 appeals at the Supreme Court of the United States. They take about 200 of those cases every term. Below that is a whole system of courts called the Court of Appeals, which there are 11 or 12 different circuit courts of appeal, depending on how you count it up, with different courts out there. There are literally hundreds of thousands of cases that go through there and are the final decision. They never get appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States, let alone even heard. But below that are district court judges, federal judges that are hearing routine cases. And there are literally millions of cases across the country that are stuck or stopped at the district court cases. So when you're thinking about judges, the focus is appropriately at the Supreme Court of the United States. But think of the different hundreds of judges that are out there that will be there for the rest of their careers, more than likely, or at least as long as their lifetime holds out and they want to be there, that are going to be hearing important cases. This is where the rubber really meets the road. That's where we spend a significant amount of our time at the trial court, district court level, and then having arguments on appeal at the Circuit Court of Appeals.
Tell us some of the cases that really do tell a story of what's going on and the rights of people being trampled on, and that you guys helped to get the right decision.
I think immediately of two churches in Houston who were in the Fifth Ward of Houston. They had been in a bad area of Houston called the Fifth Ward. They called it the Bloody Nickel. It was such a bad area of town. But these pastors moved in that area specifically way back in the 50s and 60s because that was their home and they wanted to minister to those people. And so they built up a church in that area. And it became a good neighborhood again, or at least a decent neighborhood again, so much so that the Houston Housing Authority wanted to take their property and turn it into some retail space. And so they threatened to take their property. They asked them to buy the property, and the churches refused. No, this is our home. This is where we want to minister. And before long, they said, well, look, if you don't sell it to us, we're just going to take it by eminent domain. And these churches were taken in just a little bit in their offering plate. They couldn't afford the attorneys that were needed for this. We were able to join up with them, match them with some attorneys there in Houston, some incredibly top-notch attorneys in the city of Houston there. Working together, they're still ministering today on the Fifth Ward. Churches were scheduled to be bulldozed, literally scheduled to be bulldozed on the Fifth Ward. And instead, they're having a vibrant ministry on the Fifth Ward.
You know, so the local government lost those cases.
They lost those cases. Yes, sir.
Oh, man. Thank you for what you did. Kelly, yesterday we started talking about something and then we changed the conversation and evolved. You were talking about an executive order that President Trump has been considering, but it ran aground, and explain why.
Well, there was an executive order that it was leaked to the press that was really going to deal with a number of the promises that candidate Trump had made on religious freedom, a lot of these issues that we've begun discussing. And it's actually an excellent order if you look at it. It deals with a number of these different issues, whether it's the cases like that are against that Family Talk's having to deal with and Little Sisters of the Poor. It would exempt all the ministries from the Obamacare HHS mandate to buy abortifacients and that kind of thing. All those lawsuits would be over just with one little paragraph in the executive order. It would make sure that all the 17,000 faith-based federal contractors aren't excluding from ministering to the poor and the needy through these programs simply because somebody doesn't like their beliefs about human sexuality or about marriage being a man and a woman. It would make sure that no citizen has to deal with the federal government punishing them in any way because of their beliefs about marriage. The Johnson Amendment about restricting what pastors can say about elections would be over. It would deal with a number of these issues. So it would be excellent and it would provide for religious freedom. But right before it was about to be issued, evidently, from what the press says, there became a leak of it. Some of the LGBT community said, we're going to file lawsuits, we're going to create problems, and it hasn't come out yet. But I'll just say this. This is really important. I mean, President Trump has been very faithful on his promises. I mean, people who don't like him still would probably admit, well, the stuff he promised to do, he is doing.
If we learn anything from the illustration that you just gave, it's that you never win the battle between good and evil with one event. I mean, it continues on a different level. I believe in a literal Satan, and I believe that he's out there walking the streets, doing everything he can to destroy not only religious liberty, but our faith itself, especially when it comes to children and what takes place in the schools and so on. You have to be constantly vigilant and be willing to sacrifice to pay for the legal expenses and whatever. We have to stand up and fight. We can't just say, oh, we won the last election. Let's go back to sleep. I'm afraid that's what will happen.
That's the danger now. And that's why I think this timing right now is so key. This is that first time with President Trump being pushed to go the opposite way of what he promised on religious freedom. Do I think he's going to buckle? No, I don't. I think he's going to do the right thing. But you know what? He needs some help, encouragement from the people who voted for him for that reason to say, you made these promises. I've seen the leaked executive order. This would be great.
He's in a tough spot, isn't he?
He is. But that's why we put on our website a petition that anybody can sign and send to the president that makes really clear, sign that full executive order on religious freedom. Unleash this religious freedom that you promised to do. I think, you know, even people who are planning to do the right thing can get a lot of pressure. And they need those who are behind them to say, we're standing with you.
Well, you talked about a petition.
Yes.
Tell them how they can sign it.
If they just go to First Liberty, spell it out first, firstliberty.org, right on the front, we have a petition that they can sign. I encourage people, sign this and make sure we get this to the president and share this with other people. There's probably other people that don't even know this battle is going on. I think this is important, not just because what's going to happen in this order, but because I think it's setting the stage for all of President Trump's term. If he stands strong right here at the beginning for religious freedom, I think it's going to really set the course and the momentum for where he's going to continue to stand throughout his term, whether that's a 4 years or 8 years. And so I think this is the crucial battle over whether he's going to back off. That's not his general tendency, or whether he's going to follow through on what he promised to a huge number of his votes that voted on this very issue.
So America, in its historical understanding of religious liberty, of faith, of dependence upon God, on revering the scripture, the things that our founding fathers handed down, that is still hanging in the balance in this nation.
It is.
I mean, we could still find ourselves as outcasts or as people who don't have a voice in the law.
Yeah, I mean, I could give lots of examples. Let me just give you one. Currently, there's an executive order that was passed by President Obama that's in place on lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, that would say if you're a federal contractor with the government, you can't have beliefs or positions that are, quote, discrimination against sexual orientation, transgender, et cetera. That means if you believe marriage is a man and a woman, you now can't serve the needy or the poor. What a crime it would be if the needy and the poor could not be served by these incredible faith-based ministries all over the country because somebody didn't like what they believe about marriage being a man and a woman. It has nothing to do with them helping or providing. This religious freedom executive order would make clear that, oh, no, we're not going to do that. We believe in religious freedom. People can have disagreements on these issues, but what we believe in America is people have a right to have those different beliefs, and we still work together for the good of our country.
What about federal grants that are given to benevolent organizations, I think Catholic Charities particularly, when those politically correct ideas that were put into the law by President Obama and his team would prevent them from participating in this benevolent effort? I didn't say that very well, but I think people understood what I
meant. No, that's exactly right. That's what we're talking about here. We don't want to exclude religious groups. Because, I mean, talk about discrimination. For the government to say, we're going to have all the religious groups be able to serve unless you have these beliefs about human sexuality and marriage. It's like, that you've had for thousands of years. I mean, that's not what we do in this country. We believe in religious freedom. We believe in people holding different beliefs on those things. If they're here to do a good, if they're here to serve the public, we don't exclude them. And that's what's at stake in these. You're talking about, and think of all the colleges and universities, for instance, around the country that are religious. Well, many of them have federal loans and things that come to their college, which means these same types of requirements will apply to them and tell them, oh, well, you can't participate. You can't be getting loans from the federal government if you have those beliefs.
You guys are authorities on the Constitution. I would like you to go back to the fundamentals and tell the people who are listening where the origin of their rights to religious liberty are rooted. Where do we find that in the Constitution? We know it's in the First Amendment, but in what way?
Well, I think you first start with even the Declaration of Independence, which says our liberty, our religious liberty, comes from God, and therefore no government can take them away. We institute a government to simply recognize these rights which already exist. So God gave us the right to have a conversation
then
with
him. How can it be against the law to stand up and use God's name in a public venue?
It can't.
Where did that come from? How did we sink to that level?
People trying to change our country, trying to change our law. I mean, this is one of the great things about America is we think that our liberty comes from God and nobody can take it away, no government. That makes us very different from other countries. That's why we have under God in our Pledge of Allegiance, for instance. That's the very reason it was put in to make that clear. But what happens is the first two amendments to the Constitution say Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. We believe in the free exercise of religion. But there are people who don't want that. They want religion removed from public. They want it sort of pushed to the corners of society. And if people aren't willing to stand up and push back, that's what they'll get, is they'll get a country where it's pushed to the corners of society. There are, I'm glad to say, because the listeners don't always hear good news. Every one of our cases, we stand next to a hero. We stand next to somebody who is told, you either back down from your faith or we're going to harm you. And these are people who said, I'm not moving. I'm standing on my faith, I'm standing for my Lord, and I'm standing for our Constitution. And we're, as I said, we win. For 16 years in a row, we have won over 90% of these cases. But the only way we can win and set these precedents and then protect other people is if heroes stand up, whether it's the two churches that Jeremy mentioned earlier, whether it's I think of Coach Kennedy, who we're representing, who was fired because he went to a knee after the football game to give thanks to God for the privilege of coaching these young men.
Where does his case stand?
It's at the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals.
Ninth Circuit.
He was told—
The most liberal court in the land.
Exactly. He was told, you go to a knee and you'll be fired. And he went to a knee. And I really think that's a test for everybody who follows the Lord. You're probably going to have this kind of a decision at some point.
Has that— the decision been adjudicated? Do we know the outcome?
Well, no. At this point, at the district court, the court said he's not protected. And now we're up at the Federal Court of Appeals. But those are the kind of heroes. Now, you know the Ninth Circuit's overturned like 80% of the time. So yeah. We hope to get a good decision there. But if we don't, we'll go to the U.S. Supreme Court. I think of the heroes around the country, and there's so many I could talk about.
What
that
about
we represent.
The pizza issue and the cake baker and
Aaron and Melissa Klein, who we represent out of Oregon, who because they wouldn't do a gay wedding cake, have been bankrupted. They've been fined $135,000, and they were told by the judge not to speak publicly their beliefs about marriage.
Where's that case stand?
We're at the Oregon Court of Appeals. In fact, it's going to be argued
involved
any day
in
now.
That.
Yeah, we represent Aaron and Melissa.
You got your hands in a lot of pie.
We do, and people need to pray for these people. I mean, this is not fun to go through, what they're going through, and they really are heroes. The good news is, though, if people are faithful, I think God blesses them individually, but I think— we're seeing a lot of victories. And, if Aaron and Melissa Klein win, they don't just win for Aaron and Melissa Klein. They win for every person of faith who's running a business anywhere in this
country.
And
that's why the Supreme Court has got to be populated by people who are willing to look at the Constitution and decide on the basis of the law, not on the basis of some bias.
That's absolutely – that's why it's so important who these federal judges are. They're appointed for life, and the Supreme Court all the way down to these district courts. Think of – because this has happened, Dr. Dobson – a number of our volunteer attorneys, our litigators that work with us around the country, have become judges, federal judges for life. What do you think they've done when good cases have come before them? I've never seen such excellent opinions in my life. So our goal is to get those kind of people on the courts for the next 30 or 40 years for lifetime. What a difference that makes for our kids and our grandkids.
Jeremy, it must give you a great deal of satisfaction to be part of an organization whose cause is righteousness. That really is what's at the fundamental. That's the basis for what you guys are trying to do. You're trying to defend righteousness as described or as protected in the Constitution of the United States.
I love how our mission statement puts it. Our mission at First Liberty Institute is to defend religious liberty for all Americans. And it's a great privilege to be able to stand next to a bunch of heroes, as Kelly's mentioned here, our clients that are willing to stand on these issues. But I also think of the four faces of my sons at home. And Ronald Reagan once reminded us that freedom is not something we pass down through the bloodstream. It's something we've got to recommit ourselves to for every single generation. And so, you know, I look at Dr. Dobson, your generation has handed that torch of freedom to my generation. It's incumbent upon me now to hand that down to my children, to teach them the ways of our country and the ways of religious liberty in particular, so that they will not only grow to love liberty and to love religious liberty in particular, but then to use that religious liberty to be able to preach and proclaim the gospel in the corners that they need to do so, and that then that my grandchildren will begin to do the same thing and perpetuate this on down the line.
Do you sense a ray of hope in this country?
Absolutely.
10 years ago, did you not?
You know, I was a lot more reluctant at that point, but I tell you what, I was hopeful because I know Americans. And I know that there are enough Americans in this country who believe like you and I do that this country has been given a special position in this world. As Kelly mentioned, we're maybe the only country that has approached it from the perspective that says, hey, look, we are by nature free individuals created by God, bestowed with certain rights at our creation. Now, we've got a responsibility with that as well. And there are enough men and women in this country that understood what that looks like, that were willing to stand up, and I think in this most recent election, and say, let's get back to freedom.
Mm. So it's really not theology, although it's based on it. It is really religious freedom. You're not trying to – I mean, one of the criticisms of people like you guys and all of us is that we're trying to force our views and our perspectives on everybody else, and they all got to think like we do. That's really not what's at stake here. It is the right to make up our own choices and decisions and to follow our understanding of God or even no belief in God. I mean, that's the beauty of America. It's freedom.
That's right. And I think there's a reason why we call it religious liberty. Because if we lose our first freedom, if we lose our first liberty in religious liberty, if we lose that, we're losing liberty in this country. Yeah. And that cannot be done. We cannot sit idly by while that happens in this country.
Hmm. We're out of time again. Man, you guys are stimulating to me. I love talking to you. I love what you stand for and what you're trying to do. And I hope our listeners got a grasp of it in these 2 days as well. The name of your organization is First Liberty Institute, and Kelly Shackelford is the president and CEO of First Liberty Institute, and Jeremy Dyes is a senior counsel. And it's been a pleasure having you here. Kelly, it's been 6 years since you were here. Let's don't let that happen again.
There's plenty to talk about. I'm willing to come back.
You've got so much to say to us. And thank you guys for flying out from Dallas to be with us.
It's a privilege.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and I hope you've been inspired by this conversation with our special guests Kelly Shackelford and Jeremy Dyes, talking about the importance of the judicial system in the fight for religious freedom. You can find out more about the work they do at the First Liberty Institute at their website. It's firstliberty.org. While you're there, you can also find out more about the Religious Freedom Executive Order and sign the petition encouraging the president to approve it. We have a link for their site as well at drjamesdobson.org. While you're online, please consider how you could support the work of Family Talk as well. Your prayers and your financial support really help us stand up for righteousness here in the culture. You can make a donation online at drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825 to make your tax-deductible donation. Thanks so much for standing with us, especially at this time of year. And by the way, today is the last day to enter our giveaway. We're giving away an iPad Mini 2. Join us on our Facebook page for more details and also find out how you can enter. You can find us at facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and we'll see you again here next time, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.